Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourselves around the world. Hello again and welcome from the DevelopPod team, the Teacher Development Special Interest Group podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. And today we continue in the series of the future of teacher development. This is the theme for this year for the TDSIG. Including our academic journal, the TDAJ, so look out for that. This episode you'll hear is with Claire Steele and Sarah Smith, co-directors of Eltonics. I hope you enjoy the interview. During the podcast, I signpost various previous episodes of DevelopPod, which will be in the show notes. Also, they're included is the website for Eltonics and the Facebook group. So over to the interview. Enjoy. Welcome to Claire and Sarah from Eltonics. Welcome both to the studio. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
You're so welcome. Thanks for your time. Sarah, first of all, maybe where are you working and what are you doing right now?
So I'm based in Greece, in Athens. This was where I met Claire, actually, but I work mostly online. So Claire and I co-founded and we're directors of Eltonics, as you know, Kristin, already. So most of our work is done online. We deliver webinars, we do materials writing and things like that. But also I work here and there for various CELTA centers as well.
Yeah, I'm also the director and co-founder of Eltonics, but I'm not based in Greece. I'm based in Portugal and also work as a CELTA trainer round and about.
And just for the sake of transparency, I guess, we've all met before. Greece, in fact, when I came over to visit, and Claire and I worked together as co-trainers on CELTA courses in Colombia.
We did.
So tell us a little bit more about Eltonics. I know you've got a great website, eltonics.com. That's eltonix.com. And there's a lot of information on there, some great videos. And you shared a bit about your background. But briefly, how did Eltonics start and what is the objective behind it?
So Eltonics started as a result of some perceived failures on our part. So Claire and I were both working for a very well-known language school, international language school, and we were part of an academic management team. And I was in charge of young learners and Claire in charge of adult courses and teacher development. And we were trying to work out why our teacher development initiatives weren't really having a lot of impact. And these were the initiatives that were sort of pretty standardized within the company that we were working for at the time. So we had long discussions, mostly at Greek tavernas, to be honest, about what was maybe going wrong and what could we do differently. And we started researching exploratory action research. And that was where the idea for Eltonics kind of started. So we thought of working on an individual basis with teachers to help them with their classroom practice. And then it kind of expanded. We found ourselves doing really different things then. So webinars is a big part of what we do now. We do little bite-sized courses and everything. But it really came about because we were so frustrated at the time with the lack of impact, perhaps, that our teacher development initiatives were having. So we wanted to revise that. And I think we're going to come back to that maybe later on. Yeah.
But not only did we do research, we also asked lots of teachers as well, their experience and their thoughts on what they were doing in terms of professional development in their context. So it was kind of a little bit of us and also getting a lot of information from the teachers as well, like listening to them and their voices.
I think it was mostly the teachers, in fact. When we couldn't work out what was going on, we were asking teachers and also students. So student voices became very much part of the way that we ended up approaching ongoing professional development. And then it that kind of shaped what Eltonics is to today, really.
The core of what we do is actually the voices of the classroom.
So how did the voices from the classroom and the voices of teachers shape how you think about teacher development and what you do?
I guess a lot of the teachers were commenting on teacher development and professional development in their context being quite top down, compulsory. They didn't really have any decision making or empowerment in that. Some of them commented on it being quite nerve-wracking because maybe their jobs depended on an outcome of an observation, that some of them couldn't afford to do courses on the wages that they were getting as teachers. So it was basically a lot of this top-down decision making from the school, and there was, I think, a gap with them not being able to give their voice and not being able to think from their classroom with their particular students. And this is where exploratory action research is crucial, because exploratory action research actually explores the perceptions of what's happening in the classroom. So, for example, you'll be exploring your students' perceptions. You'll be exploring your own perceptions, and also you can get a colleague to come in and observe, and then you can ask their perception as well.
So what you're saying is the very essence of what you do is encouraging bottom-up teacher development using the voice of students and teachers. Do you think we've heard a lot about bottom-up as opposed to top-down teacher development over the last perhaps 10 or 15 years? Do you think it's changed very much in flipping towards bottom-up teacher development, or has it remained the same?
Sarah?
I think within schools, it remains to be top down, I feel, based on what I hear from, what teachers and colleagues, people in our network tell us. And I think that's probably because of time constraints. So it's often easier, perhaps, for a school to implement top down initiatives like regular observations, at certain times during the year, or we're going to deliver insets and that's delivered by the member of management. I think precisely because it's less time consuming, in that if you're going to implement bottom up strategies, the teachers probably need mentoring to go alongside that. And I think that's where schools and management teams really lack time. And I think that's what we felt when we were working as a management team together. We didn't really have that time to afford teachers to kind of guide them through what a bottom-up teacher development initiative would look like. Because I don't think anybody's really equipped to, well, I'm probably speaking personally now, but I for sure wasn't ever taught what exploratory action research was, for example, as a bottom-up initiative. And I didn't know where to start. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't even know that I could do it. I thought, everything that I do in terms of professional development will be told to me or will be suggested to me by my direct line manager as a result of my performance in the classroom kind of thing. So I think, for bottom-up initiatives to really work, teachers need mentoring, they need support, they need somebody to kind of bounce ideas off. They need to know how to go about it, perhaps, or to have ideas around how to do it. And that's perhaps not something that many managers can do because of the amount of work that they've got going on elsewhere. But that's my feeling based on what I hear from colleagues. What would you say, Claire?
I guess it is bottom up, but I hear quite a lot of this self-directed teacher development. And I guess that self-directed PD is linked to bottom-up strategy, because it's about the teachers, learning in their own time, under their own conditions, and they're in control of their own learning. But I think, again, to reiterate what Sarah said, I think you still need other perspectives there as well. You need to listen and know how to explore different perspectives of the classroom and the classroom behavior.
And we've got a couple of different episodes on action research, actually. So I'll refer our listeners. I'd just like to jump in. With an agreement that, as far as I can see, there's very little in terms of bottom-up teacher development. As a teacher, I still need development, and I was working in a school, and I really needed some revision in how to keep young learners entertained and motivated. However, the official development was observations, and the director of studies knew that I was experienced and said there'll be an observation next week. And I said, I really haven't got time to do a lesson plan now. I said, the aims are on the board, the steps of the lesson are on the board anyway, because they insist on that. Do you mind if I don't do a lesson plan? It's like, well, can you do one quickly? Now, I didn't see the point of that. That wasn't focused development for me. And he came out saying, that was a really great lesson. And that was it. There was just no feedback. It's a tick box thing. And I think that's a real shame because it could have been done in a very different way.
Yeah, I think you've just highlighted, that whole write a lesson plan kind of thing. It's a good skill to have, absolutely it is. But once you don't really need to do a lesson plan in the way that is sort of, you follow this template that you're given, and you've got to give specific information in each one of these little boxes. That doesn't work for everybody, certainly not for me. I prefer to mind map something and kind of really see it visually. And I guess if your focus is, I need to know how to keep young learners really motivated, then that's got nothing to do with writing a lesson plan, right? It's got to do with classroom techniques, perhaps, or ideas that you might have. And that reminds me, actually, sometimes, I for sure do it. We go into the classroom and we're teaching a group of learners, and we make an assumption. So we say, oh, you know what? This class doesn't like writing at all. They just don't like it. This is our assumption based on our students' reactions. And then we go off and perhaps we ask a colleague, what kind of writing activities do you do? Or I'm going to go find a course about how to teach writing. But maybe our assumption is wrong. Maybe it's not to do with the writing itself, it's to do with something else. And that's where we've really got to ask our students, I think, as well, what's going on, or why are we reacting to these writing activities in this way? And I think this kind of observation from a manager or even from a peer doesn't really explore this, because your manager also has assumptions about what they see from the learners. I think observations have a place, but it shouldn't only be this.
I think, Christian, you've highlighted exactly what we're talking about, where your voice as a teacher has not been heard whatsoever. You know that there's an area that you would like to explore, which is kind of engaging these young learners. And then your manager comes in and just looks at the whole process, the whole thing, the lesson plan, everything, everything, everything. It's not focusing in on your needs and what you think you need to work on and what you can see is happening in the classroom. It's a really good example of that. And to pick up where Sarah was talking as well, teachers do make assumptions. And that example with the teacher of writing, Sarah mentioned there, that example is with a teacher I worked with who came to Eltonics and said, my students don't like writing, they're bored, they're immediately disengaged. I need to do something to engage them. And that is an example of an assumption we make. Okay, so once we've asked the students, what do you like about writing? What don't you like about writing? Once we've got someone in to observe that particular area, because that's what the teacher wants to work on, they give their perspective on it. And then the teacher themselves asks themselves a good question in the mirror. What is an effective writing lesson? What do I think that is? Where am I assuming these things are going? Once you've collated that information, and this particular teacher did, they found out that it wasn't that they were bored, they didn't know why they were writing and they didn't know how. So that's where we then worked with the teacher to engage the students in goal setting and criteria setting and negotiating criteria. And it had a great impact. And that's a really good example of working with the teacher instead of, not listening to their voice and doing this mandatory observation.
And maybe going forward towards What do teachers need to do to adapt in terms of their own teacher development? With this top-down approach, we tend to believe development is X, Y, and Z, what we're told it is. So how will teachers need to adapt? And perhaps how can Eltonics help them to do that?
I think we first help them to explore perceptions. I think that's the first stop. We talk to the teacher and get an area of focus. For example, in your case, engaging the children in activities. And then from that area of focus, we then design specific questions that explore that area from themselves as teachers, from the students, and potentially from an observer of some kind. It could be a colleague or a manager. Once you've got those different perceptions, you can start to understand the context a little bit more and understand where to go and change some practice in the classroom to see what effect that has.
I was just going to ask, teachers need to ask their students the questions to find out.
And we can do that in many different ways. Like off the top of my head, that could be a focus group. It could be an activity in class you do. It could be a questionnaire. There are lots of different ways that we talk to the teachers about in Eltonics to get that information from the students.
Great. Sarah, what were you going to say? Sorry.
I was going to say, I think that kind of thing will take some time because it's a mindset change, right, on the part of the teacher. And through no fault of their own, because, as schools continue to do this kind of compulsory top-down kind of style professional development, we buy into that as teachers for sure and think that's the only thing out there. And we're made to think perhaps that we work on the students and not with them. And it's really important to flip that and actually start with, as Claire said, our assumptions, our perceptions, and the students' perceptions, and put that together to start exploring a little bit more. And I think that takes time because we're so kind of used to a certain way of developing that to kind of let go a little bit and put it onto your students and react immediately to their needs. That's a bit of a mindset change, I think, that might take a little while. And I also think the industry really kind of propagates this kind of certificate collection. I understand why that is, and Claire and I, as and you as well, Christian, I mean, we're all CELTA tutors and, and it has a value for sure, but it's not the only form of development at all. These kinds of courses don't really work with the students' voices very much. And I think if we start our life as a teacher with those kinds of courses, then we have a certain expectation of how professional development should look, which in the long term can be quite restrictive.
You know, that reminds me actually on one of the very first CELTAs I worked on years ago now. I'm not going to say how long, but it was like the second CELTA course. I was brand new to it. I was a freelancer, so I went into a completely new context, and there was a main course tutor who was super stressed. And the main reason why they were super stressed is because they didn't want complaints. They didn't want the trainees to complain. And so one of the things they told me on the first day was, don't ever let your trainees ask the students how their lesson was. Because if the students say it was great and you give them, a not to standard lesson, it's going to cause complaints. And I just remember thinking, that's just not how it should be.
Bonkers.
I'll never forget it. It should be the students are the center of everything. And something that I might think, okay, I wouldn't do that in my practice, I wouldn't say that, or I wouldn't have done it that way. Maybe that's great, but the students loved it. Why not?
I've long argued for a student voice in observations. They should have a voice.
Absolutely.
So you're saying we start with listening to our own inner voice and asking students, and then from there, exploratory action research. Can you put that in a nutshell? Maybe give us a quick example of that.
Exploratory action research, okay, it starts with your focus. You'd come to us and say, look, my students don't like this, or they're not engaged in that, or I really need to get my students talking fluently. So you've got your focus, and then we explore what's happening. So from your perspective, the student's perspective, and possibly a peer as well, once you've collated that information, it will inform some change of action. And that can be in a form of an action plan, which is either a series of lesson plans or tasks or activities or techniques that you change in the classroom. And you monitor this and evaluate this and eventually reflect on whether that change has had any impact on your initial focus. That's it in a nutshell.
And that potentially gets fed back into a whole loop of making a change to the change, if you like. And okay, great.
Yeah, it's a continuous process. And that doesn't necessarily go into the next class that you teach, because that next class is a different dynamic with different contexts and different issues and beautiful things going on as well.
So I guess we've talked about a lot of things already, bottom-up teacher development, self-directed teacher practice to some extent, and exploratory action research. I guess some of those elements would come into it, but how do you see the future of teacher development perhaps for the next decade or so?
Oh, that's a good question. I do think it is going to become more self-directed. I think, you know, exploring the areas of community of practice, communities of practice is when you have a group of teachers that work together and work on, it could be a number of things. So they come together as a community and talk about and work on their practice.
So collaborative development, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, anything that's sort of self-directed and has that collaboration with peers, and including the student's voice that we just can't say enough of, I think that needs schools to invest more training with teachers on how to do that appropriately. How to train teachers to listen to students, to choose the right direction to go in.
Sorry, Claire, it's like teacher as researcher, isn't it? And I think if you're going to become a researcher in any way, then you do need support in doing that. So yeah, absolutely. Instead of, you know, these input sessions on how to write the best lesson plan ever. I keep going back to lesson plans. I must be mentally scarred by lesson plan writing for sure. But no, instead of that, perhaps, or alongside that, it could be, you know, how to conduct this kind of research with your students in your classrooms, and then kind of where you can go to talk with other teachers to kind of problem solve together. To come up with ideas together and so on.
I think there are very few schools doing that, language schools at least. I do know a few schools that are. For example, Sylvana Richardson talks about it in an earlier podcast. And teachers who are encouraged to individually, I know, do that as well to primary school teachers in the Czech Republic on a previous episode that you can listen to. I also know that in mainstream education, it's relatively common. So I'm a governor in a primary school and they're doing action research in the classroom. But I don't think it's very widespread still in the English language teaching world. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a lot to do with time. Sarah, what you're going to say something then?
I was just going to say this comparison with mainstream education. I think it's a really useful one because EFL, it's an interesting industry in that we take a little bit longer to kind of assimilate these things and accept these things. And one of the things that I was thinking about also is the content of these teacher training initiatives and so on. I think, you know, whereas in mainstream education, there's a lot more now on the psychology of the learner, on supporting students who have special educational needs, differences, disabilities, metacognitive skills, creativity, teaching your students critical thinking skills. It's taken a little while for the EFL world to include.
Yeah.
Anything else you think is coming up in terms of horizons for teachers?
I think what we get asked a lot about, you know, sort of what maybe teachers approach us to learn more about is inclusive classrooms. And I think that's been explored quite a lot in ELT over the last, you know, couple of decades. I mean, remember the parsnips rule. that we used to have, and that kind of got a bit of a backlash, and then we started talking about inclusive materials and so on. So I think this kind of notion of inclusivity is very popular at the moment. But I think in terms of the future, perhaps inclusivity is not the way to look at things, because inevitably when you include one identity, you exclude another. And I think inclusive classrooms kind of look at learners in terms of identity as a kind of siloed thing, like you're one identity, like this child is ADHD, this child is LGBTQIA. And I don't think that's really perhaps the way forward. So maybe the future might be looking at diverse classrooms instead of inclusive classrooms. And that diversity could be things like multilingualism. There's a lot of research going on in that area. The different identities that the students have that they bring to the classroom, and that we really need to sort of celebrate and appreciate. And I think the other thing that we need to be looking at is sort of how we teach young learners language. We're still very much explicit language teachers when we should really be teaching some content, and English is the vehicle through which we teach rather than the sort of end goal. So that's maybe something that really needs to be, explored more in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
So, how can people get hold of you if they're interested in these ideas and your support in this area?
We are available at the website, www.eltonics.com. So there's a form there, and you can contact us there. Otherwise, you can contact us via email. So our email is team@eltonics.com. On LinkedIn, we have a LinkedIn presence. We've got a Facebook community of practice, in a sense, or group of really amazing teachers from all over the place, which is really fun. And that's called Eltonics Connect. So absolutely free to join that and share ideas or ask questions and so on.
Thank you so much. You're doing some great stuff. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Great to see you again. Good luck in all you do. Bye for now. Thanks for listening. Please do subscribe to the Developer Podcast on your platform of choice, and the episodes you'll find just pop into your feed magically. Please also stay in touch with us on our various social media platforms: Facebook, LinkedIn, X, Instagram, and Threads. So take care and see you next time. Bye for now.